All right. Wow. It is Wednesday, and it is 5 p.m. Windy Wednesday today. Time for American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. By now, I imagine you know who I am. I'm Tom Ryan. With me, of course, as I always let you know, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi, on engineering the board.
Am I working or am I hardly working?
You're definitely working because you're there to keep me honest and make sure that things go right because I have no idea how to do what you do anymore. Anyway, we're here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 p.m. Happy to be here for Drive Time doing what we do. On Wednesdays, if you're new to us, what we've been doing is we have this thing about albums. We love albums, and albums have been suffering a great deal in the past decade or so, mostly because of all the digital stuff that pretty much ruined them. You know, and I don't mean vinyl albums. I mean the idea of a collection of songs put together in any format, mostly because of all the music services that exist and such. People more or less rely on that, and to me, it's a big mistake. You're not going to get to hear things that the way that the artist intended you to hear it. There's also the whole idea of the fact that music, when as it is presented by the artist, is meant for a reason. And so we're here about it. Keeping this thing alive is the best way to learn about the history of music that you could possibly hope for, I believe. So we started this series playing albums from the beginning of the album era, which is to say we started in 1955. We're working our way forward. Eventually, we'll get to somewhere near the present. I'm in no rush to do that. And we're about at the halfway mark through. We've got two lists. We've got one list, which is the alternative top 40, albums that never came onto the top 40 at all. And then another list, which is the top 500 of the top 40. So that gives us a nice, fair way of distributing what we're doing, and it's not based upon sales or anything like that. It's 100% my opinion, whether you like it or not. But that's where we're at. And this is pretty much the midpoint. We've been doing this for, about 11 years now, Heidi, I think? It's outrageous that we're doing that. We probably got about another 11 to go before we can finish it. So we're doing all right. The album we're going to cover today was released in December of 1976. And this is definitely an album from the alternative top 40 because it did not chart at all in the United States. Probably never could or would have either because it's a pretty obscure record. It's by an artist named Augustus Pablo. And the title of the album is King Tubby's Meets Rockers Uptown. Now, I got a bit of a history for this. It's going to take a little while for me to share it with you, but I think it's really important that to set this up so that you know what it is that you're listening to and why I picked it as one of the most important albums ever. See, by the time King Tubby's Meets Rockers Uptown was released, Jamaica already had an extraordinarily rich history of altering pre-established recordings. The island's indigenous music scene was based almost exclusively on non-indigenous sources. What I mean is, like, Jamaican music originally wasn't based on Jamaican music. It was based on what they heard on the radio from the United States, mostly. And then when they turned it into their own thing, that's how ska eventually came in. They just changed the beat a little bit. That's about it. So the non-indigenous sources, meaning the American sources, were mostly rare instrumental tracks from various parts of the southern United States. DJs would, quote, boast and toast over their found treasures from sound system trucks, which were basically like ice cream trucks with speakers on the roof that they would drive from town to town or from field to field, and everybody would come out and gather around the truck. This created an atmosphere that would convert neighborhoods into spontaneous outdoor block parties. As time wore on, the DJs grew more sophisticated. The same basic methodology applied, but now the singing DJs gave way to producers playing with multi-track recordings. Four-track and eight-track recording became commonplace in the late 60s, and the recording engineers used the technology to record band members separately and then layer the various sounds together in a process known as mixing. While dubbing in the background vocals and or other studio professionals to fix any perceived shortcomings on the original song. So to this day, it's still done pretty much the same way, even for homemade recordings, except that nowadays, most producers work with a minimum of 24 tracks. With a history based on sound alteration, Jamaicans discovered an entirely different use for multi-track recordings. Rather than simply mix the sounds together in a conventional manner, they manipulated the faders, which is the basically the volumes, adding processing and playing with playback speeds until the basic track was barely recognizable. The technology allowed them to eliminate vocals, crossfade various instruments, fading them in and out, while applying sound effects like a chef adds butter. Or a French chef would how a French chef would use butter. In a stroke of genius literalism, Jamaicans called their process dub. Dub actually means a lot of different things, though, in Jamaican culture. Some people note that the word is derivative from dupi, which means ghosts, or more specifically, the ghosts of those killed from the racial violence of colonialism, with echoes representing disembodied voices and sudden sounds representing the harsh fate that befell the native culture. This is a romantic notion, but it is more likely that the word derived from doubling or creating a modified version of an existing track. In dub, the tracks are often stripped of all ornamentation, leaving drums and bass as the primary characteristic of the recording, then adding a slapback echo while fading in random bits of the original track, giving each, quote, version, which is a very popular word in Jamaica, a spiritual life of its own. Regardless of the technicalities, it's no small matter that dub came to fruition in Jamaica, a country that revered marijuana and, through Rastafari, had even elevated it to a sacrament. Imagine being high out of your mind and hearing these ganja-induced mixes for the first time on a superb stereo sound system. Americans need to relate. In other words, if you got them, smoke them. Now, King Tubby, who was the artist on this album, and Lee Scratch Perry, the producer, were among the first experimenters in dub technique, randomly interchanging instrumental and vocal mixes, then altering the rhythm until something entirely new resulted. The results were fantastical, almost psychedelic, and incredibly versatile, leaving space for DJs to add their own vocals on a whim. Now, meanwhile, Augustus Pablo followed a similar path, creating the, quote, Rocker's record label for his own recordings, usually featuring him playing the melodica, which is a very simple instrument often used by children to learn music notation. Pablo worked with some of Jamaica's finest musicians, so his team with King Tubby was as inevitable as it was fortuitous. As the career of Lee Scratch Perry can attest, there is little about the history of dub that is linear. But King Tubby's meets Rocker's Uptown is about as close as we can get to an actual document that captures the Wild West spirit of Jamaican dub music. Perry may have been there first. His Blackboard Jungle album was released 3 years earlier, but distribution for that record was limited to only 300 copies, and it has been relentlessly re-released with alternate versions that bear little resemblance to one another. It's crazy. It's almost impossible to collect Lee Scratch Perry records because it's limitless. Augustus Pablo had a larger commercial following, though, and his King Tubby release marks a point where dub became legitimized as an art form in itself. As befits the style, this album also exists in a variety of versions with different covers and song arrangements. It is difficult to determine which version is truly definitive, but in the land of dub, confusion makes much more sense than linear logic. So don't worry about any of that. Let me give you a taste of what we're talking about. Track one, side one, from King Tubby meets Rocker's Uptown, is this track entitled, very simply enough, Keep On Dubbing. All right, there it is. See what I'm talking about? How, like, you can tell that the record is actually a song that is dismantled and then put back together again, but in a wacky way. It's almost like you're playing with, like, a children's toy. What are those blocks that you, the Legos.
Oh, I was going to say Lincoln Logs.
Maybe that too. It's something that you can take apart, but then you put it together in a way that it was has nothing to do with the way that it originally was, and it becomes something completely different, even though the ingredients that you're starting with are exactly the same thing. So that's that. That is dubbing, what you just heard, a perfect example of what it is. And it's one of the first examples of a dub record, from a dub record that was actually selling and did get some recognition outside of Jamaica. Unfortunately, no Americans were listening to dub in 1976. You know who was listening, though? The punk. Just about every punk that came from England were listening to dub and listening to it with regularity. Almost anything you hear by The Clash is, most of it is based on what they heard about from dub records. And if you listen to The Clash's album Sandinista, which was about maybe 4 years later than when this was released, you can trace it directly back to an album like this, maybe specifically this album. Let's play one more, and we can talk a little bit about the band and whatnot as we get as we move along. This song is called Stop Them, Ja. Track is called Stop Them, Ja. Playing King Tubby's Meets Rockers Uptown. Going to play the entire album. I wanted to give you, because when the first time I heard dub music, it shocked me. I got so excited that I couldn't believe it, because I'd never heard anything like that. The idea of somebody using faders and dismantling a song and releasing it in dismantled form was a crazy idea. I've been listening to music my whole life, and really the whole idea is like producers are meant to add things, layer things, and then mix them together. Like if you think about your average Beatles record and what George Martin did, that's normal. No, that's an exceptional example, but that's the way most records were being made. To suddenly hear the exact opposite happening was just a total freak out for me. It was around 1978, and I had just discovered the band XTC, and I became a huge collector of, I had to have everything that they ever put out. And I had discovered that there was a little 45 RPM record that they were on. There was a magazine called Record Mirror, and there was a free 45 that had a live version of the song Traffic Light Rock. And I had to get it, even though the damn thing cost $20. It was just for a stupid 45 record. So I spent the $20. And what on that record were four songs. The other three meant nothing to me. But the two songs on each side, the song after Traffic Light Rock on that side was a song called Control Tower by U-Roy. And it was the first time I had heard dub, and I liked it even more than the reason I bought the XTC record. And I ended up, if you're a regular listener, you may remember, you'd have to be a real regular listener, but about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, we played the U-Roy album. I think it was one of his first releases, because that was really the absolute beginning of the first time that dub existed. This is where dub gets sophisticated with guys like Lee Scratch Perry. But anyway, that's my story for falling in love with it. And now to this day, I mean, every time I hear it, it's just so fun to think what these guys would do. Lee Scratch Perry would take any of these songs and he would record maybe 20 different versions, with him moving faders in totally different ways and moving left and right on the balance and everything. And he'd somehow release all 20 of them on different albums. So maybe one would appear on this record, which is credited, of course, to Augustus Pablo, but it might be on 19 other albums credited to other non-existent artists. He would make names up and put them out. And they maybe would only sell 150 or 200 copies, but that's the way that Scratch Perry worked. He just never stopped. It's impossible to obtain a complete catalog of his stuff. I would say literally impossible. But if you're going to start, this album is a great place to start, the Augustus Pablo album, as you'll hear as we keep going. We could play two back-to-back, I suppose, Heidi. Let's give it a taste. We're going to play Young Generation Dub, and then Each One Dub. You notice how every song has dub in the title one way or another. Thanks. I'm glad you're still with us, by the way. Thank you for staying tuned in. I appreciate it, because I know that there's probably some of you are scratching your head and saying, what the hell is he playing? This is totally strange. And it is foreign to most American minds, because there's really nothing in our culture that resembles this. But I'm not alone in pointing at this as being a crucial album. I like the word crucial, because that's a word that gets used a lot in Jamaica, by the way. But if you, the British magazine, New Musical Express, like I said, dub was hugely popular in Great Britain in the late 70s and throughout the entire 80s. So NME in 1985 ranked this album that we're playing, King Tubby's Meets Rockers Uptown, as the 96th greatest album ever made. Number 96 on a list of 1 to 100. Of all time. It was the 55th best reggae album of all time. And in that all-time top 1,000 albums by that guy Colin Larkin, he's got it listed in his book as in the top 500. There's a book called The Rough Guide to Reggae, 100 Essential CDs. It's been there in the top 10. The Guardian, that's listed the album as well. And it was chosen as the second best reggae album of all time by Mojo magazine, of all time, in their list of the 50 best reggae albums ever. So if you think I'm crazy, then so is a whole lot of critics and a whole lot of other people. The thing is, it's really just a matter of tuning into it, getting your head used to what you're hearing, because it's just very, very different. It's basically like production in reverse. It's unproduction, which is, I think, what makes it exciting. Okay, we're going to play the last song. I mean, the other thing about dub is it's almost always on vinyl. It kind of doesn't work any other way. It has to be a record for the most part. Now, of course, I'm playing a digital version of it, but this came off of an album. And this would be the last song on side one, and then we will have to flip the disc, so to speak. This is called 555 Dub Street. That is actually because the address of the studio that they were working at was number 555 something else, something street. So they just named it Dub Street. There you go. You can't ever even tell when they're going to end. Everything's a surprise. By the way, let me remind you.
That's a surprise ending.
Yeah. You listen to WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. And, of course, the show is American Hit Radio. And it's Tom and Heidi Ryan here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6. The Friday show is completely different than the Wednesday show. I guess you probably do know that by now if you're a regular listener. But if you're not, you can expect something completely different with what we do on Friday, because it's got a different topic, different theme, et cetera, et cetera. Wednesday's album day. That's what this is about. Trying to basically school y'all on, you know, catching up with what great albums there have been and trying to keep them alive for obvious reasons. I hope it's obvious. All right. So let's talk about the personnel on the record just a little bit, because this will help maybe give you a feel. This is the musicians are actually musicians that you've probably heard on other records. If you're a Bob Marley fan, then you probably know Carlton Barrett was the drummer, Carly Barrett, and he's the drummer on this record as well, as he is with Bob Marley. And his brother, Aston Family Man Barrett, plays bass guitar. He's also in Bob's band, also wrote some of the songs with Bob. So you've got the two Barrett brothers. And Robbie Shakespeare, one of the most famous bass guitar players in the universe, is the bass player on this record. And then you got Earl Chinna Smith on guitar. Now, there's also a trumpet player, a tenor sax player, and a trombonist that are playing the different parts. And then you've got, of course, Augustus Pablo, who plays some piano, organ, and clavinet. But the real thing that he's playing is that plastic child's toy, the thing called a melodica, which is you just hold it in your hand and it's the simplest instrument in the world. It's simpler than a harmonica. But when you put it into this context, it ends up being something completely different and unique. Okay, so this brings us to side two, and the opening track is called Brace's Tower Dub. Yet another, like it's almost like they decided to pull the plug rather than let the song end. You know, it's really, really strange. Well, the album is called King Tubby Meets Rockers Uptown, and that's actually the title of the next track that we're going to play. It's the title song. It was a single. It was released in 1974 on Mango Records, something, a label that is obviously not very well known here in America. Now, it was originally a song that was called Baby, I Love You So by a different artist, by a guy named Jacob Miller. It was the B-side of one of his 45s. So they took that song, erased his vocals, and then just messed it up. Totally messed it up. They pulled things out, you know, the left-right thing that's going on with all the faders and everything. And that is how it was released under the name Augustus Pablo. Now, it was originally produced by Augustus Pablo. He did the original mixing, but then the real work happened when he would take it to the studio to work with Lee Scratch Perry, because Lee Scratch Perry is the one who would then destroy it, so to speak. He would just tear it apart and then say, look, here, this is what you get. He could probably do it in 10 minutes. And that's why he would do it like 15 or 20 times, because he would have all these different versions that he could distribute to the DJs who were moving around in their sound, you know, what are they called? The trucks. the sound trucks. So everybody would have something unique. And it was something that the other DJs couldn't get, at least not in that particular version. So that they were very revered, or the DJs loved having something that was unique in Jamaica because it gave them an edge over everybody else. On the album, though, this is the version that stuck, and so to speak, I mean, this is the most famous version. All Music Guide says that, quote, this song is widely regarded as the finest example of dub ever recorded. In an All Music review, they say the guitar parts are chopped up, while their decaying echoes pass slowly out of phase with the song's underlying rhythm and set up a tension that plays nicely off of the song's minor key groove. It's a cool way to explain it in a technical sense what's going on. But you don't have to worry about any of that if you're enjoying it. It's called King Tubby Meets Rockers, Uptown. King Tubby Meets Rockers, Uptown. As I said, that was a single with vocals and everything, and you hear a little pieces of the vocal coming through on that, just a little bit. Again, All Music, who called it a masterpiece, they say this says about as much about King Tubby's genius that his phenomenal dub of this song would be even more interesting than the vocal version. And I guess that's just because the whole idea of dub made it so unusual and new that it was in a very exciting thing. To me, it still is. I think you can probably hear it on my voice. I just get excited when I hear dub. A lot of people just get really mellow. There might be reasons for that, because there's things that go with listening to dub, that sort of thing. But there you have it. All right. This is an interesting fact now. I went to Wikipedia to find, you know, like the song listings about, and some of the information that I'm reading to you now is coming from that. But they list the song titles, and the next track, according to Wikipedia, is a song called Corner Crew Dub. Now, apparently, that's the most common version of the album. But like I said, With dub music and Jamaican records, nothing is predictable. On the record that I own, I don't have Corner Crew dub. That song is eliminated. The record that I have is called Brace's Tower Dub Number 2. So even though you buy the exact same record, you might not get the exact same songs. It's really a strange truth, something that is very unique about Jamaican dub culture, which is really normal in that world. So we're not going to hear Corner Crew dub. We're hearing Brace's Tower Dub Number 2. Another. Why not? Oh, well, I'm back anyway. I was going to say, I'm driving Heidi crazy because I can't make up my mind about what I want to do. Let's play two in a row. Let's just get right into it. That was Brace's Tower Dub Number 2, which happens, as I mentioned before, is on my weird version of the album, not the traditional version that they're talking about on in Wikipedia. But we agree on the rest of the songs. those are the same. So the next track is one of the only songs without the word dub in the title. It's called Say So. And we'll follow that with Skanking Dub. You don't have any wrong.
Oh,
That brings us to the end of our show, just about. Got one more track to play for you. I hope you enjoyed this. I hope that you found it to be not just different, but gratifying in a way to hear something completely different. This isn't the type of stuff you hear on the radio normally, right? So I'm very proud of WHPC, by the way, for letting us do what we do here. Anything we want to. It's amazing. All right. From the album King Tubby's Meets Rockers Uptown by Augustus Pablo, this will be the last track. It's entitled Frozen Dub. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week, unless you can join us on Friday. Bye-bye.